She played the fiddle in an Irish band, but she fell in love with an Englishman. Kissed her on the neck and then I took her by the hands. And baby, I just wanna dance. I met her on Grafton Street, right outside of the bar. She shared a cigarette with me while her brother played the guitar. She asked me, what does it mean? The Gaelic ink on your arm. Said it was one of my friend's songs. Do you wanna drink on? She took
Jamie. Hello, my name is Dave Hannity, and there will be no escape from Ed Sheeran and his Galway girl. I didn't want to open the show this way, but Craig Fitzpatrick made me do it.
I insisted on it. We're capturing the mood of the nation, I think.
We are. No nicknames, as promised at the live show.
No, David, it's over.
Speaking of the live show, we sold out the Workman's Club.
Yeah, it was a good night. People turned up, which was good. I didn't have to go all James Franco and like disown you halfway through the show because it was going terribly and I didn't want to be associated with it. So,
How many times did I bury you during that show?
Oh, quite a lot, yeah.
Quite a lot,
it was pretty bad.
It went
was there any time you felt slightly insecure? You just went, oh, Craig hates such and such.
Pretty much, yeah. I was a bit nervous, quite nervous on the day.
You can lean on me.
It went really, really well. And again, a thank you to everyone who came, to all the acts and people who shared the stage with us. It really couldn't have gone better. We got to meet some people, some fans of the show who've been kind of supporting us for a long time and they were lovely. So yeah, overall, I had a great night. And a surprisingly mild hangover the next day. How was yours?
It was fine. Yeah, I was still in the high. It was good. Not an actual high, like not a chemical high.
Sure.
I suppose it was technically chemical because all highs kind of are chemical, but it was, you know, I was upbeat.
Very good. Very unlike you of a Friday morning. So, yeah, No Encore Live was a massive success and I dare say we will do it again. So watch this space. We don't have Cullen Morrigan this week because he's off judging the Choice Music Prize.
Yes.
Instead, we've decided to get the gang back together, the old Hot Press gang before pre-Cullum, BC, as it were. Selena Murphy of the Daily Star and ex-Hot Press is in the studio with us.
Woo! Just clapped myself.
I'm glad you joined in because it would have sounded pathetic.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. We can have a stadium applause effect or something.
I would
in.
Love that.
Yeah.
And some football rattles. We'll go all the way out.
In fact, I might make that my ringtone.
How the hell are you? This is the first time the three of us have been in the same
it's
room.
Been a while.
Probably
it's
since been a while. We were being shouted at.
I feel like we're much calmer, cooler people right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we've grown up. We're all
we've
grown up.
We've grown as people.
We've grown. Well, what do you miss most
I've
about
had my
not
off
working
my
around?
Ooh, the sexual chemistry.
Yeah, between me and Dave.
Yeah, but I get it on the podcast every week, so it's all good.
Good.
Every single week. There's so much to miss about Hot Press, but considering that I kind of trashed them at the live show.
That was amazing.
Only to find
out. Someone is in the audience as well?
Roshi.
Roshi
there. Of course it was Roshi.
It's just like, there's no one from Hot Press here, is there? I'm just here. Yeah. Roshi. Okay.
God bless her.
She was very good
She's
about
amazing.
It after the show.
Of course she was.
Thanks so much for being there. Roshi's one of our favourite Hot Press people, so it's fine. But it was a learning curve. As was that show. But no, Cullum's not here because, as we say, Choice Music Prize. By the time this podcast comes out, we'll know who won and we'll know who lost and we'll know about all the drama. And here's why. Because here's future Cullum with a brief Frontlines report.
The winner of the RTE Choice Music Prize Award for Best Album of the Year, Rossignano Family.
And there it was. It's fair to say that 2016 was an incredibly strong year for Irish music, but it's also fair to say that one album stood out from the crowd. God knows Murley and My Name is John were emotional as hell accepting the award, and frankly, we're still getting to grips with it when I caught up with them a little later on.
It's so hard to fathom, bro.
It is. Because it's like, I still don't, like, to be honest with you, like, for an album that people were rapping on, you know, that's the fact that people have played down what hip hop or what rappers and producers
can do
for
in
so
this
long
country
that we don't actually believe it.
But you know what? Like we said, you know, if you're laughing at hip hop in 2016, then hip hop is laughing at you.
You know what? We were probably just really happy that. Between the three of us, we were like, hey, we can actually make music that feels real to us. And when we were in the studio, I think that was something where we'd record something and we'd listen back and we'd be like, jeez, you know, whether anyone else gets this, we get it communally, I think, between ourselves. But we never saw this coming. No.
Like, we hope it did. We definitely hope that it will make that impact because we felt like what we were speaking about, because some of it were very personal, and there's no point you know, putting that stuff out there, if it's not going to influence anybody, or if it's not going to, you know, change someone or make someone look at life a little bit different to the way they do it. So we hope that it will have an impact, but to this level, we know.
I've been thinking of the master plan, but all I got is a pen and a mic in my hand. I see Indian dance to precipitate the rain, like the Applejack dance, I stay ahead in my name when I drop.
I can't wait for all the many firsts that are coming.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, because they are there, they're coming. And yeah. Like, I firmly believe in those, you know. The one thing I never doubted is the fact that we can take this far, you know. But it takes more than just you making a great product for people to actually recognize it for what it is. Like, this didn't have to be, people could have just been like, hey, it's a good album. But really though, does it compare to people who are actually playing guitars? And I know those comments are gonna come online, people will be questioning it. Mm-hmm. Or did he just give it to them because they're a multicultural group and all that stuff? But at this point, I really don't care, you know. All I care about is that this album that we made, forget about me or John or G, the album, people listened to it and thought it was really good.
Yeah.
It blew my mind.
It's not even ours anymore.
It's not ours anymore.
That's there for everyone else. Yeah. The very first, the day, and it kind of goes back for like a little bit longer than Let the Dead Bury the Dead. So the very first day that myself and God knows were due to record, which would have been the 1st of January 2014. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
For our first project together, got some bad news that day. And it was like, oh. And it, for me, that was life-changing. But it was also, within that day, it was like, you need to make a choice. So you actually have a feeling that you will make something really good, you know, if you go and do this. But there's the temptation to put it on the back burner and go, no. So it went on the back burner for about 6 hours. And I remember making the attempt, like, just being like, no, we're doing this. We're going ahead. And totally to the lads, you know, those are not easy situations. And I'm sure there are times for the lads where they're like, I'd actually love to work with a producer without the baggage that's coming with us. And what it did was it brought us, I think, the three of us to a place where we're like, you know what, life is actually quite real from time to time.
Yeah, for sure.
And sometimes in music and sometimes in entertainment, it's not quite real. But it needs that. It actually needs it for people to vibrate with music and to resonate with it and go, geez, I feel what's going on here. And that's what we're trying to do. And in one sense, we're saying, yeah, life is tough. And in another sense, we're saying, life is absolutely brilliant. It's beautiful. Go meet people. Go talk to people. And that's, I think, kind of, we could, like, sometimes you have to look at the dark side of life. Sometimes you have to look at the light. And that's something that we're very interested in seeing.
Go back where you came from. I don't want any of your kind here anymore. Transition plane from Turkey, but you gotta be close.
Nazis, you're skeptics. Those people are influential to us, but they're not any more influential than a 17-year-old kid from Limerick City could be.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's hands down.
No, definitely. It's like, sometimes you feel like, I mean, it's not to say this is the only reason why we do it. Because, I mean, this wasn't the reason why I started doing it. But then seeing, when you encounter these people in life, it gives you more. It adds that little bit onto the motivation you had already. So it's like, oh wow, I don't want to let these guys down though, you know. So it's like, even if this album hadn't won the choice tonight, like just being nominated and being here, it was already some form of recognition that we really, really, we were really proud of already. And we would have been saying that, you know what, if you get nominated this year, then hopefully the next album, maybe you go one step further, you know. Then you want to keep going in that direction.
We're going for the Mercury.
Oh well, absolutely.
We're going for the Mercury. That's it.
Thank you, Future Cullum.
Yeah, I can't believe insert artist name here won.
I'm shocked.
Delighted for them though.
I didn't think there'd be so many fisticuffs.
Yeah, I can't believe he glassed a guy.
Well, that's Cullum.
Yeah. Several.
Several people.
Several by the sounds of
things. You have to fight his way out of the room.
You've both been choice judges before.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I have to stop hanging out with choice judges.
Why?
Because it's making me insecure that I've not been asked yet.
You've got a type. It's choice judges.
I do want to do it.
Do you?
Yeah.
You don't like sitting in a room arguing about music, do you? Is that something you're interested in?
With 10
pursuing?
Other people, yeah. I'd love to do it. So if you're listening, Tony Clayton Lee, organizer of the Choice Music Prize, I am available next year.
Yeah, it is quite fun.
It's good crack.
Well fed, yeah. And you hear some judges kind of say, you know, without going too much into it, that it was got quite heated and they didn't really enjoy it. But I had a good experience. It was good.
I think my panel were pretty subdued. Like, nobody was like pounding their fists on the table or anything. You know, it is, you talk passionately about an album you love and then immediately afterwards someone goes, oh, well, I just thought that was rubbish. But that's true of like a conversation about music in a kitchen at a party, so.
I suppose the nature of any kind of awards thingy is that you have to get a consensus, so that kind of just means, I don't know.
It needs to be a broadly entertaining album.
Yeah, there is a bit of that, yeah.
Well, I wonder if next year Ed Sheeran will invoke the granny rule and see if Divide gets
called
in.
Up for Ireland, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you know, we've seen kind of some tenuous links before. And, you know, none more tenuous than my link to our first proper news story. Ed Sheeran wants to start a boy band. And he also wants to write a film script or something, Craig. What's going on here?
Yeah, he wants to become like a renaissance man, I guess, because he's not like done with just dominating music. You saw that like top 16 of Spotify where it was just all of his tracks in the new album, which we'll talk about.
Well.
Including the deluxe. What is a deluxe album like when in the age of
when
Spotify?
It's digital.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
Well, do you pay more? I didn't check this, actually. Do you pay like a quid extra?
No.
I think it's like a limited edition type thing or wherever it's released. But also, so hang on. We are going to review Ed Sheeran Divide as our featured album of the week later in the show. So I had the good sense to look up those deluxe tracks in advance and know that I could stop listening after 12 tracks. Did you guys listen to the whole shebang?
I did.
I did, yeah. I kept going.
Look at these professionals.
I actually found that I hated much less.
Like we're into a review.
the bonus tracks. Actually, some of the bonus tracks, I felt like, oh, that would have been a bit of energy if he put it on the main thing. But anyway, yeah.
Well, hold on.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Let's talk about his film career.
I didn't hate the album, by the way.
Okay, we'll get there.
He's been talking a lot because he has to, you know, promote this little record he's put out. And he says, I really want to make a film that I do the soundtrack for and star in. That's my next thing. I look at a film like Notting Hill and I think that's like a brilliant benchmark, or Once. So if you're to mix Notting Hill with Once, I would say that would be a good start.
Falling Slowly is legitimately in my top 5 most hated songs of all time, I think. And I don't mean to like keep sounding like a negative guy, but I hate that song. Like, I really, really can't. I can't
stand it.
It's
the actual song as opposed to the film. I
hate the film as well, but the song.
Like, you were dying to review Ed Sheeran's rom-com right now. You were like dying to get into that press screening and just...
I've walked out of places when that song has come on before. I've walked out of places when America by Razorlight comes on. I've walked out when that of Monsters and Men Little Talk song comes on. And they do that. Hey! My skin is actually starting. I can feel my skin crawling just thinking about
now
it.
Now you're just getting over.
Do we reckon he'd be a good actor?
Ed Sheeran?
Yeah. Could he do a Hugh Grant?
He'd be charming enough, yeah, in a Hugh Grant way. Yeah. Like, I'd say he could.
Possibly.
Pull it off.
He has acted, though. He was in...
He was in Bridget Jones's Baby.
Was he?
But he was in that for such a short amount of time that you couldn't even begin to figure out if he can act.
He was in a really bad medieval TV show from the guy who did Sons of Anarchy called The Bastard Executioner. And he did a very small role in that.
Okay.
And I didn't see it because it looked like a bad show, but by all accounts, did all right.
Hmm.
So he says he's actually in talks with one filmmaker that he really loves. And he wants to cast all unknowns, like have a low budget indie British made film. So I don't know. I guess it's Shane Meadows he's been talking to. But yeah, I don't know. That could be an absolute disaster.
He does love Glenn Hansard, and he loves that kind of performer. So I can see why he's like
massive Damien Rice fan.
Same thing that he's done. Yeah.
He also wants to put together a boy band.
Yeah.
And he's written the songs already.
And this has pissed off a lot of people in the pop community, pop fans, because he said, you know, like, he's going to do it right. Like, he said, like, you know, I'm going to pick the right people. It'll be a super pop. It won't be like this typical manufactured stuff. And he was kind of even saying something to the effect of, you know, I don't want to find myself at a point in my career where I have to do the Super Bowl, which a lot of Lady Gaga fans have been pissed off about. And, I mean, you know, as Craig said there at the start of these things, he is promoting a new record. He's being asked all these kinds of questions. And I guess he wants to, you know, diversify himself a little bit. But I think the pop scene is quite good at the moment. I think it's quite strong. And I think that, you know, if that was a gig at Lady Gaga, like, it's a strange time to have a dig at her because she's just coming off the back of the...
But why specifically Lady Gaga? Because a lot of people...
Well, she's the most recent person to do this.
I know, but you could have said Bruno Mars. I mean, he didn't specifically name check her.
No, but, you know, like, this is the modern day and we run with what we run with. So, yeah.
But okay.
Super pop
but also,
boy
isn't
band,
he
though.
Going to manufacture the boy band?
This is
the
it,
point,
yeah.
Yeah.
What exactly does he mean? Yeah.
I mean, I'm
pop?
All on board with this. Like, if it sounds anything like the song on this album we're about to talk about that he wrote for Rihanna, I'm all on board with this. But it does seem a bit kind of 1990s.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, everything he wants to do seems pretty 1990s.
He is very, very
maybe
90s.
He's going to get involved with Bross. They're back. Yeah. Bring them in.
That is what we've been waiting for.
Well, he has, you know, he's written songs for Justin Bieber, which was Love Yourself off the last record, which is a great song.
Yeah, like, I'm probably going to make the argument during our review segment that I kind of prefer when he's not singing his own songs, so this could be perfect for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, Love Yourself is interesting, and we'll get to it properly in the album review, but, like, I do think that there's a dark side to Ed Sheeran. I do. And I think he's a lot more bitter and venomous than a lot of people think that he is. Like, in terms of some of his songs, like, that song, Love Yourself, is incredibly bitter. Like, you know,
yeah,
it's very stark.
You know, my mama don't like you and she likes everyone. That's a
fucking
cutting
line. He does have a couple of bitter moments on this album.
He does, yeah.
As well.
There usually is more interesting moments, though. But someone you're a fan of, Craig.
Do I have to talk about Jack White now?
Big Jack White. Craig on Jack White.
He's back, nearly. He's recording a new album. But more importantly, he's had a profile written about him. And it's quite revealing, but it's just kind of Jack White being Jack White and extremely eccentric. So essentially, you know the way he now records records in like this kind of phone booth thing? Not a phone booth, but like a record booth thing that he created?
Yeah.
So he does all that kind of stuff now. And he makes like vinyl with three sides. And for this record, he's essentially just kind of like isolating himself in his bare home with nothing but a few obscure paintings and a tape recorder. So he's talking about this setup he's got, and he says he was imagining if he could just break his leg and be in hospital for 6 weeks. And he says something about a room and a cot and little space, you have nothing to do. And he goes on to say he's going to try and write songs where he can't be heard by the next door neighbor, and he wants to write like Michael Jackson. So instead of like writing parts on an instrument, he's going to come up with them all in his head, which Michael Jackson used to do. Like, he would come up like the bass with the bass line to Billie Jean and just sing it. And then get other people to play it. So that's what Jack White's trying to do now. I guess
all the musicians listening to this are like, wouldn't we all love to like take a million years out our seven jobs and just do whatever we like?
Yeah, this is like, I saw...
I think I would do that if I was Jack White as well. I'd be like, oh, you know what, I'll try and ride in a haunted castle.
That's what I think. He's living a really good kind of rock star life because he's just doing all the kind of like childlike... Because the White Stripes music was so... Like, he's so obsessed with childhood stuff and retro stuff, and he's just become a massive rock star. He's got enough money from like Seven Nation Army that he just pumps it all into now doing these kind of like whimsical things and not giving a shit.
He was also apparently reportedly in talks to direct a Matthew McConaughey movie. But no, I think like Selena raises a good point because it's like... I saw this thing recently where Hans Zimmer, the film composer, has like a masterclass on YouTube, and the trailer for it is high comedy. Like, it looks like a Saturday Night Live sketch. It's just so over the top and strange. And he has a point where he's like, he's sitting there and he goes, like, he's in this weird theater, and he goes, oh, you know, anyone can do it. He goes, you know, the theme for Sherlock, he goes, one microphone and a laptop, boom. And it's like, you're surrounded by millions of dollars worth of equipment, and you have teams of people who work under you. Like, Hans Zimmer is like James Patterson when it comes to books now. He just slaps his name on things and has all these people around him. So yeah, I'm sure it'd be easy to do all these, or at least fun to do all these projects, if you didn't have to worry about paying the fucking rent. So yeah,
of all true. The people I thought you would have beef with, I never thought it would be Hans Zimmer.
It's not beef with Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer's
a lovely man.
That is the title of the episode. Beef with Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer has made some phenomenal music. I like him a lot, but he's also... look up that trailer and try not to laugh.
Okay,
that's
I will
all
do
I'm
that.
Saying. Okay,
but I do think Jack White is like, he's dead right to, you know, push the boundaries of creativity however the bloody hell he can.
I mean,
you know?
He's a bit of a weirdo, isn't he? Like,
you've always been a big fan. I
love him. Yeah, I think he's great. I think he's a proper rock star, like, in the sense that he's just interesting and, you know, strange and a bit otherworldly.
I liked his James Bond theme with Alicia Keys. Thought that was fun. No
Much
else.
To Ride It.
Oh,
yeah, I really liked it too.
Yeah,
Another Way to
good.
Die.
Yeah.
It was good. It was different.
I'm going to Detroit in 2 weeks, so I'm going to go to see his, like, Third Man Records
oh,
store.
Cool.
And he has,
oh,
like,
wow.
They've just started actually producing vinyl, so I think you can pay to get it produced
nice.
In America or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's going to be so quirky, I'm not going to be able to handle it.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
I'll never
that
be back.
Amazing.
This is my last appearance.
Please, no, please give us a frontline report.
Yeah.
We'll
insert it
been
here.
Roped into doing that now.
One per episode. Phil Collins is coming to Ireland pretty soon. He's going to be supported by Blondie at a big stadium gig. And he got a letter from his daughter And apparently it's for the world to read as well.
Yeah, so actress Lily Collins, do you guys know her? Because yeah. you watch yes. movies and stuff on TV.
Sure.
Okay, is she, what's she in?
A powerhouse performance in the Taylor Lautner post-Twilight flop Abduction.
Oh, well, okay.
That's a bad movie.
She's done a good few rom-coms, hasn't she?
She did a...
Love, Rosie.
Mirror, Mirror type thing, was that her? Or the some Cinderella type deal.
Yes.
And she was in like the Mortal Instruments. A lot of failed...
She's in a movie soon with Alden Ehrenreich. Otherwise known as future past Han Solo.
Yeah, that's a,
oh right.
He was in Hail Caesar. He stole the movie.
Oh, he was great.
He is good.
Lily Collins rivals Colin Farrell in the eyebrow game.
She's great. Eyebrows.
Terrific eyebrows.
Okay, well, she's got a new book of essays out,
which I hadn't heard of before this very moment.
Unfiltered, no shame, no regrets, just me. It does sound like a bit of a vanity project.
You see, female celebrities writing their memoirs is like my favourite genre of books.
Really?
So I'm actually surprised I haven't heard about
it. At 27 years of age as well, no less.
Yeah, I mean, just when, like, every essay is about you, I feel like that might be a bit overkill. But actually, no, one of the letters is about her dad. And it's actually quite a serious letter, in fairness. I mean, she talks about her feelings of abandonment and frustration. But then kind of goes on to say, you know, she hopes they can develop a stronger bond. But it turns out, like, surprise, surprise, Phil Collins, as a big rock star in the 70s and 80s, wasn't really around much. He, like, moved to Switzerland to be with his, what would become his second wife. Actually, no, sorry, his third wife. So she kind of felt hugely abandoned. She talks about how, you know, she struggled with an eating disorder. She said that a lot of her deepest insecurity stemmed from these issues with her dad. So she's kind of spoken out about that. And in fairness, I mean, you could say, I mean, airing dirty laundry, but he's kind of put out his own book and his kind of warts and all, and talked about how he wasn't the best of guys. So it seems like they're cool with airing that kind of stuff. But I know it seems like a kind of classic rock and roll star kids thing, right?
Yeah, I guess so. The spectacularly titled Not Dead Yet book, by the way. Which
great
is
title.
Yeah, also the name of his tour.
He seems like quite a funny guy, just in terms of being interviewed. And
well, there is that story about him breaking up with that wife, I think the second one.
Okay.
Fax Machine,
yeah. Which is the most 80s thing.
That is amazing. I love that.
And I don't know if that's true, and I'm sure it was very heartbreaking for the woman.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy that anecdote.
I saw Niall O'Neill linked this week or last week to a 70-hour version of the drum loop from in the drum fill from In the Air Tonight.
Yeah.
How long do you reckon you could last?
You see, this is the thing. I can't get on board with the kind of post-irony, actually all the music in the 80s was great. I'm on board with that, but Phil Collins is too far.
Oh, no. Phil Collins
Not
has
Phil Collins.
Seen it. Please back me up on this. Phil Collins
love
has some...
Phil Collins.
Really?
Thank you very much. He's got some fucking
Take
great
Me
songs.
Home. Have you heard Take Me Home?
I've heard all of it.
You've heard everything.
I've heard it all.
He sounds like me now. This is willful ignorance over here and total dismissal.
I was just passing the cynical from one of us to
I'm
the
a
other.
Peter Gabriel guy, okay? You have to choose your teams.
Do you actually not like In the Air Tonight?
No,
it's
I don't
brilliant.
Really, no. Now, it might be because of the association with the gorilla in the
ad. That's brilliant. That's one of the best ads I've ever seen. There's a great story about that ad, about how, like, you know, like they had to fight and fight so hard for that ad to happen, and thank God they did. That's iconic, man.
Okay, all right. Well,
Sussudio?
Actually, that's kind of a tune. Sussudio. Yeah, I like the fact it's a made up word.
I believe that everyone likes Phil Collins.
They just don't want to say it.
Yeah, or maybe they just aren't aware of it. Like, maybe it's not like you don't put on his albums.
I don't put on his albums.
But I firmly believe that you do like Phil Collins.
I don't know. I kind of like the idea of him more than when I hear the songs. I'm just like, I can't imagine how he ever became so enormous. Like, he was gigantic.
You Genesis man? Yeah, is that what I'm hearing?
I was a Peter Gabriel guy, so yeah, it's very much pick one or the other, I think.
I could see Craig on a Sunday, smoking jacket, glass of red, listening to Duke or something like that, yeah?
Bit of so, maybe.
I can't believe you don't like In the Air Tonight. Jesus Christ.
No, I'd rather listen to, I don't know, In Your Eyes.
What else is in the news this week, Grego?
So Zayn Malik has been given an award.
Reluctantly given an award.
Yeah. Well, he was
Nobody
kind of...
Nobody wanted to give it to
he
him.
He was foisted this award, which wasn't his, and then he was given a fake award. So essentially, the iHeartRadio Music Awards, which was hosted by... Can anyone guess?
Dermot O'Leary?
It was in California.
Zane Lowe?
No. It was Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, good God.
Oh.
But also, iHeartRadio is definitely...
That's why I've never heard of iHeartRadio, because it's American.
Yeah, and you know what it is? It's owned by Clear Channel.
Ah, okay.
So actually at this award ceremony that no one heard about, Bruno Mars played and Ed Sheeran played and everyone played because Clear Channel ruled the world. But they don't rule giving out awards well. So essentially what happened was this Oscars flub style thing where I think they were in rehearsals and they put out online that Zayn Malik had won Best Music Video for Pillow Talk. Unfortunately, Zayn was not the true winner. It was Fifth Harmony, which was, you know, obviously the realistic choice. They then kind of took to Twitter again and announced the mistake in a series of apologetic tweets. We want to apologise to all fans for the confusion. Incorrect messaging was pushed out on Saturday night during rehearsals. They then went on to say that essentially he was the winner of Best Solo Breakout Artist. Congratulations again to all of our winners. And then people quickly realised that this wasn't a thing, and it was the hashtag, hashtag iHeart was rigged. So essentially, people that were also nominated in this fake awards bracket were like, what? We didn't hear about this. Because it wasn't a thing. They just made it up to keep Zayn happy, keep him sweet. I don't know.
I'm so confused and I so don't care. Like, this story makes my head hurt so much. It's like someone gave an award to someone and then decided to give another award to another person, but decided at the wrong time in history to do it, so there was backlash.
I just think that thinking that you can just make up an award now when the internet exists and like all of your other categories are put out there is somehow going to cover it up and no one's going to realize.
But like,
and also feeling that you have to appease Zayn.
But see, because you're, it's more appeasing Zayn's fan base, because you're dealing with Fifth Harmony fans and Zayn Malik fans who are massive on social media, and there are so many fan based accounts. I'm pretty sure. Have you checked recently, Craig? I know after you interviewed, was it Mark Fahili from Westlife?
Yeah,
you interviewed him a while ago.
I did, yeah.
And I remember you putting it up online, saying, "Here's
Marcus." By the way,
sorry. I know, yeah, he went all serious pop star, avant garde style. And I know you put up a thing saying, here's my interview with Marcus Fahili, which led to you being retweeted like about, you know, 100 times. And then didn't you get like, you know, lots of like Mark Fahili Indonesia fan accounts following you?
Yeah.
So it's a big business, this social media.
And game. Also because I always have to follow people back, even if they're like, they're possibly bots, because
Craig
I just feel
back
bad.
Like porn bots on Twitter. Because he feels impolite.
No, because I didn't realize
that
they were porn bots. Or I'm just like,
he's raised right.
I don't like the idea of someone like following me and I'm just like, oh, great. So yeah, I just do it automatically.
That's what they want.
But then I
do.
Have like that feed where it's just like all teenage girls that like kind of Westlife and stuff and Codeline. Actually, when I did kind of Codeline interviews, there'd be a lot that would follow me. So I just had too much of like clogged up with people talking about their leaving cert. So there's been a call.
Do you feel like a massive creep?
No, it was just kind of like, this isn't a world I should really be in.
You got to get
just
that ratio going, man. You know, followers to following, you know? Like, I mean, like, you're never going to get it like this.
I've got
it
below.
Everyone's Twitter is just completely messed up.
I hate Twitter.
You love Twitter.
I hate it.
Hashtag Dave does Twitter is your life.
At Hanry Dave on Twitter if you want to follow me. But I really don't like it. And I'm very obnoxious on it. I don't mean to be. I'm very misunderstood. But will our songs of the week be misunderstood? It's been a bit of a scattershot week for songs of the week, and we should probably start with one that was teased, and we almost had it for the live show, but we didn't, and it's the return of Lord. This is called Green Light, and it sounds a little bit like this. But honey, I'll be seeing you ever I go. But honey, I'll be seeing you. Right, that's Green Light. I'm giving it the red light. I think this is terrible. I think this is really, really bad. I loved her first album. I was waiting for some more interesting stuff. And this is just every generic studio-strewn pop song and boardroom decided pop song I've ever heard. It sounds like about four songs in one. The chorus is just, I guess she wants to play arenas and award shows now on the regular. I'm very, very disappointed. I hope the album will have more of the first style. I can understand why you would do this. You want to move into a commercial direction, but especially after all the talk she's been putting up about it, this was a massive letdown for me. Selena Murphy.
I really like this. This is probably my favorite of her songs, but I wasn't a massive fan before. I really like her voice in that lower register. I think she's captured the vibe that she set out to capture, which seems to be like being in a club on a night out with your girls and deciding that, fuck this, my relationship is in tatters, I'm going to just completely end it. I think that comes across really well. I love the energy. Yeah, I mean, the chorus is catchy. I mean, it's been in my head pretty much all week. And yeah, as I said, like I do love that lower thing she's doing with her voice. I think is a really good place for her voice.
Yeah, I mean, to begin with, I was like, this is just video games in terms of piano chords. Like, it was very like that. And then the switch up kind of took me by surprise, not in a great way. But actually, as it kind of reached its culmination, I think the chorus is pretty strong. I think the hook is good and it has been stuck in my head. So it kind of works for me. Although I will say, like, I like the melody. I like kind of the scene, you know, she sets with the song, as you were saying. But kind of musically, it's a bit kind of generic. It's a bit, here's a kind of bit of house piano once we hit that beat. And it's kind of, I don't know. It's definitely trying to be other songs, I think.
The last song that was stuck in her head, Freak, was that terrible Coldplay Chainsmokers one. I mean, it's not always an indicator of a quality song. I mean, I appreciate that it hits the marks, but at the same time, and even that piano, that like when the kind of house piano that you referenced there, Craig, comes in, that's a bit Coldplay as well. And it's not that she's doing anything particularly wrong here. I just kind of would like more of the kind of style that was on Pure Heroine. And again, I don't begrudge any artist who wants that scale, who wants that ambition. I'm still a big Weeknd fan, even if I think that last record kind of peters out after four or five tracks, and we all know he's doing his best to be the biggest pop star in the world. There's no shame in that. There's no problem with that. But
yeah, I
expected more from her. But then again, she's like fucking, what, 20? Like, you know, there's a long way to go here. I just hope that the album is not this writ large.
So you're saying you preferred the early stuff when she was 16?
Exactly, yeah.
I really didn't get a sense that this was a kind of cynical, or not even cynical, but this is a kind of ambitious, I want to be massive type song. Maybe. I kind of thought she's just been digging this kind of music, and she wants to write that type of song.
The chorus is going to be everywhere. It's going to be on, like,
it will be everywhere. But I just,
but that's probably more why it's the first single as opposed to why she wrote the song. Like, she probably writes 1,000 songs and then gives them to the label, and they're like, oh well, this one's a radio hit, and then yeah, you pick the other one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I do think it's a bit weak lyrically. I mean, it's a bit kind of straightforward for
me. It's kind of lacking what we got off Pure Heroine, which was like a bit of kind of knowingness and a bit of wit and stuff.
There wasn't any line that kind of grabbed me.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I think I like the sound of it. I like the direction she's going in. I would listen to an album of this track.
All right, that's fair enough. I had higher hopes in as much as Craig says, the previous kind of, you know, the light and dark of the last record. And, you know, again, I'll reserve judgment fully until I hear it in the context of the whole thing. But
she'll
for
be
now,
delighted.
But for now,
you're very gracious, Dave.
That's the one thing they always say about Dave. He's very gracious.
Post live show, it's a whole new me. You know, I'm maturing in my 30s. Up next, Alt J.
Counts around, so you lean on. So much has become holders. All these evil words, oh, that we whisper, like the rubbing hands of tourists in Verona.
So that's 3WW, Alt J, a band that I've never quite understood the appeal of, and this track did little for me. I do like when Ellie Rousel from Wolf Alice pops up halfway through, kind of gives the song a bit of a much needed lift. Obviously deliberately designed to be opaque and a bit strange, but I don't know. I mean, are either of you Alt J fans?
Not really.
Not a huge amount. Like, I could never really quite get on board with them. I've seen them live and they were very poor. And I also, I don't know, the Radiohead comparisons, I think, threw me to begin with, because everyone was just like, yeah, they're a bit similar to Radiohead. And I was like, no.
Who said this?
Just trying a bit hard. When they first came out, this was what people were talking about. I don't hate them. I think they're trying to do interesting, clever stuff, but sometimes it's a bit too clever. I thought, Dave, you might like this because it's kind of, first of all, the singer is buried for large amounts of it, so.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. Well, I just, it's kind of, it's them in a more kind of opaque.
I didn't dislike it. I kind of knocked it a bit on Twitter. But, you know, Twitter, I hate Twitter. So, no, what I want to say was, it's just a bit too that way. I think we have a better song that does that in this list to come, but I just think that it's a little bit too, you know, by the fire, nothing's really happening.
It's very lethargic.
It's very lethargic.
And almost to the point that you're like, am I still listening to music? music.
Yeah.
Is this still happening in my world?
I certainly totally forgot about it once I stopped listening to it.
I found it quite hard to listen to it like actively, like I was very passively listening to it.
Yeah, definitely.
But then kind of because it was so willfully obscure like that, I was thinking, is it actually very good? And I'm just, it's kind of clicking with me.
Yeah, I did have that kind of back and forth. And like the album which is going to come out is called Relaxer. It comes out on the 9th of June. It's only 8 songs.
Great name for this album. It is. The songs are going to be like this.
Yeah, it really is. Maybe it's a
sedative.
We had participant on the show a little while ago talking about how he, you know, had some kind of like, you know, relaxation tapes as part of his set. So maybe they're taking a leaf out of his book. But I mean, you know, it's 8 songs, which already scores a couple of stars for me in the brevity corner. I'm a big fan of that.
In and out.
And I just, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I would totally agree with Cena in as much as like it's too meandering. It's too maze-like. Yeah. It's just kind of,
I mean,
like,
I like the melody, but
it barely qualifies as a song. As I say, when you get the bit of life halfway through, I thought that was great. But overall, again, I think with this one, I need to judge it in the full context. But I'll say this. It's a much better comeback effort than when they brought out that song Left Hand Free off their second record.
It was irritating, yeah.
That's legitimately one of the worst songs ever written. So.
Yeah, it's stuff like that and the kind of Miley Cyrus stuff where you're thinking they're just trying maybe a bit too hard.
Oh, I forgot about that.
But lovely guys, and they are good musicians. And I like the sound of this, I do.
I mean, it could fit really nicely into an album somewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's my overriding feeling is I could like this in the context of other songs, but on its own I'm a bit like, I don't know when I'm going to really get a craving to listen to this.
Yeah,
probably not anytime soon.
Well, let's have a song which is cut from a similar enough cloth. It's the return of Fleet Foxes, now without Father John Misty on the drums. This is 3rd of May, and I can't even begin to pronounce the accompanying double A side here. So, do you want to
Ode Gahara?
One more time?
Ode Gahara.
That's what he said. This is what it sounds like.
As we stood congregated at the firing line, song remained. So I headed to the wall, turned tail to call to the new domain. As if in the sight I've seen, you're suddenly free.
All right, Fleet Foxes are back, Craig. This is a band that are always kind of, you know, associated with kind of fires and the winter and that kind of thing. And, you know, do they still have anything left to say?
Yeah, I was going to say, at the start of it, it sounds like they've been around the same campfire for the last 6 years, just kind of playing the
same
music. Yeah, they just live there. But actually, this is really good. There's like, I don't know, it's really long. It's kind of has this stormy feel to it where it goes from like big surging kind of strident Western kind of, you know, widescreen moments to like almost like a pared back like Leonard Cohen Songs from a Room, just very sparse bits, and then you're kind of swept off again, which I thought was really interesting. And I think because it's so kind of, you know, it's this long work, it has a definite narrative to it, it feels like he wrote this for a reason, and hopefully the rest of the album's like this, and it wasn't a case of, okay, we need to get back in the saddle. It's like, okay, we've got something new to say, we've got something new to kind of play.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, obviously Father John Misty is no longer with this band.
He's only a touring drummer. I mean, it's not like he was integral to their...
Okay, steady on.
No, but I mean, my favourite thing about Fleet Foxes is videos of them with him in the background looking bored. Like, I'm not saying it like that, but it's not like
if you break these guys down to their names, you know, you got what, Robin Pecknold, Joshua Tillman, the guitarist Skylar Skelset.
Why are you slagging off their names? Can't help their names.
Skillset.
I'm not a skill set. I'm not slagging them off. I think their names are fantastic. They sound something out of like a spy novel.
Oh, like somebody wrote these people into life to be in this band.
Exactly. We were just talking about a band that has a guy in it called Gus Unger Hamilton. So,
no, I think these are great names. And I think this is a great song. It is, again, quite rambling, and you do have that kind of thing where, like, I can get up and just, you know, go downstairs and check on my washing while this is still playing, and I can come back and not miss too much. But yeah, it sets the tone for a record that I didn't really know that I needed. So hopefully when it comes out, I'll be, you know, kicking back and enjoying it properly.
And I read an interview with Robin Pecknold recently, which made me kind of really like them all the more, where he talked about why they went away, and he was in college and they were doing other stuff. But he also, it was like that kind of 2012 to 2016 folk explosion where it was just the Lumineers and Mumford and Sons. Yeah. He's just like, it was culturally exhausting. I mean, no one needed us around. It was like, fair play, mate. And they kind of started that and did it a lot better. So
Yeah, that first record in particular is great.
Yeah, they've some great songs.
Sina, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, I like that it changes tack so much throughout it. And I mean, I guess that's because in 9 minutes you kind of have to change it up. You can't really just repeat the same chorus like 14 times. Yeah, I like it. I mean, I found the most interesting part of it was like 6 minutes in when he does that very like stripped back thing. I think it might be nice in a kind of like as a soundtrack. Like, I feel like these guys would be good at soundtracks.
Yeah, that's a really good call. And I think
it's very big scale kind of.
That All J one before sweeping. As well would be on a similar tone as well. And even like the cover of that All J record looks like a 1980s film poster, like designed by a fan or something, like in a throwback way. So yeah, I think we're looking at two albums here that are going to be a lot more about atmosphere than perhaps, you know,
the singles.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. This again could fit really nicely into that album and I could end up loving that album. But it's hard to comment on just the song because it's very, I mean, I couldn't sing it back to you and I've listened to it about 10 times. But it's beautiful. I do think it's a beautiful song. Sure.
Another band that trade on atmosphere are Girlpool. They're back with 1, 2, 3. Now, Girlpool are one of those bands I've kind of struggled with because I've kind of felt that, like, there's something very trendy about them. Like, I know a lot of blogs are very fond of them, and, like, I found it hard to get into them. I kind of feel like, you know, some of their aesthetic appears to be a case of, like, here's another song where nothing happens, but it sounds really kind of well put together, and, you know, like, it's got a really lovely kind of tinge about it. This one grabbed me a lot more than most. I really like this. Craig?
I'm surprised because you didn't really like this band, but I'm glad and I'm in agreement because I really liked it too.
I'm shocked. I was waiting to be like, this is going to be fucking... But actually, I was like, no, this is really good.
I mean, the last record before the world was big. I liked the, again, the kind of idea of them just very stripped back guitar and bass and doing very kind of simple songs. There's almost a kind of Daniel Johnston feel to them where it's just a naivety. Are certainly just most, you know, lo-fi, slacker American rock as well. But when I listened to it, it was there wasn't a lot there. It was too kind of, I guess twee probably isn't the right word, but it felt a bit precious. Whereas this, they're definitely getting bigger. It's a big kind of full band sound. And it's kind of very catchy and it's kind of hypnotic and it's great. It's just kind of this revolving thing. There's no real chorus. It just progresses along and it's pretty gripping. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I hate to make obvious comparisons, but I'm brought back to growing up in a house where The Breeders and Belly were played a lot. And like those songs lived and died on the strength of their front women and just how kind of much conviction they brought to the songs and how much energy they brought to the songs. And I agree with you. I wasn't hearing that on what I heard before. But this one, I was just like, yep, this is what I wanted from this band. And I hope that we get more of it down the road. Selena.
Yeah, I feel like they very much know how to put their own sound on record because I felt kind of like listening to this, like I could close my eyes and I could be at their gig. Like, yeah. I feel like they could easily sort of take, like, go too far with experimentation with production and stuff. And it's very stripped down and lo-fi. And I think they've done the song justice by recording it that way. Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I'm not like over the moon in love with it, but I did like it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes an impression, and I kind of finally understand the hype around them. I don't think they're going to go full, like, you know, dilly-dally and be like, you know, the all-female Pixies or anything, and that's fine. I guess that space is already covered. But yeah, I mean, like, I kind of wrote them off, and again, a bit dismissively, but this is what I wanted, a bit of teeth, and we have it. But do we have a bit of teeth with the comeback of superstar producer DJ extraordinaire Norman Cook? Fatboy Slim is back. Where you is where it's at, and you can't beat that with a baseball bat. Where you is where it's at, and you can't beat that with a bat. Where you is where it's at, and you can't beat that with a baseball bat. Where you is where it's at, and you can't beat that with a bat. Yeah, this song is called Where You Is. Craig brought it to my attention earlier in the week, and
welcome.
And I wish he didn't.
What is happening?
It's the 90s.
Please, guys, what's happening?
This is really bad. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
They're like, anyone who's seen his set in 2015 will know about this party pleaser. And I was like, this sounds like a really...
He's been road testing this for years.
This sounds like a rejected ITV kid show TV theme from like 1987 or something. It's terrible.
Yeah. But like, this is about 4 years since his last song, which was Eat, Sleep, Rave, Repeat, which again was terrible. And
there's a time and a place for Eat, Sleep, Rave, Repeat.
Oh, really? You're a fan?
Yeah. It's good in the gym.
Okay.
Also, I thought that was a Calvin Harris song.
Not in a rave, no.
Not in a rave, no.
No, gym.
Not for me.
Early morning gym session.
Well, I will say,
early morning pitch meeting.
I will say that vocal is better than this because he's just like, okay, he kind of built his whole career on obviously big slamming beats, but also picking.
Can we have that again?
Big slamming beats.
Yes.
But also like really kind of picking really good vocal samples and just kind of dragging them out and making them massive things. And he was very good at picking stuff that could be expanded in that way. But on this, it's just like obnoxious. It's Biz Markie and, you know, God bless him. But like, this is just, it's like being hit in the head with a baseball bat. It's so insistent. It started playing the 12-inch version, started playing on his Spotify. I was like, this is hell. It's like a drill to my head. And the other thing is that the music, which is very 90s, doesn't interact with the vocal at all. Like, there's no, it doesn't gel with it whatsoever. And then there's a kind of half-hearted attempt at building to a drop, which never really comes. And it's like a Ford Cortina trying to get up a hill.
There's one thing you want from Fatboy Slim, it's a bloody drop.
Yeah, and he can't even manage that. It's just lackluster.
All right, I have two things to say about this song. One, I enjoy the bass line immensely, even though it's one of those bass lines that's like made in like a laboratory in a test tube to make you go like to bop around.
Yeah.
And the other thing, so in a way, I kind of like it. And then, I mean, I get that they're, you know, he wants to throw back to this like early rap with the Biz Markie sample. Yeah. But Biz Markie didn't rap the same line over and over again on purpose because he knew that would be annoying.
Yeah.
And I feel like it is intensely annoying.
I mean, I feel like you should never question Biz Markie's judgment on these things.
On anything.
And Norman Cook has.
He said, I know better.
It's been his undoing.
Just keep this one line.
Just say it again.
Like, play the note. Play
Can
the
I get that line
note.
One more time?
What, is this take 50? No, it's fine. I'm doing a thing.
But I mean
like,
how many times is it? It's one line maybe 100 times. Like, and that's the thing is I press play on this song and I thought, ooh, I quite like this. I'm getting into this. And then, you know, 30 seconds in, I was like, no, too far. I cannot.
It took me a couple of minutes before I realized. I was like, wait, hang on. I was like, I feel like I'm having some kind of weird brain thing. And I was like, oh yeah, this is just a really, really repetitive song.
It would be like, great, like, as part of a, well, maybe great's too big a word. It would be good as part of like a live set that he played like little snippets of it or played half of it. It's just, it's a lot. Like 3 minutes of it is a lot.
Yeah, like it reminded me slightly in terms of just hammering that vocal in of that Frankie Sinatra Avalanches comeback, which everyone kind of hated. I thought it actually worked well in the context of the album. But in the case of that, they just worked that sample much better, I felt, even if it was kind of insistent. Whereas this, again, even if you like the music, like that vocal is just sitting
incessant
on top of it, just going, and it's not being transformed by the music around it.
Yeah,
it's just,
this is like
it just
when,
is.
This is like when Get Lucky first came out, and when the first thing that came out was like a leaked version of it, and it was just
30 seconds
on loop. Yeah. And it took me like, I was like, this is pretty all right. And I was like, wait a minute, am I listening to the same 30 seconds?
But that was actually good though.
Well, that was a lot better than this, yeah. It begs the question though, like, does Fatboy Slim need to even release anything anymore? I mean, like he's a touring DJ. He makes millions a year, I presume. I haven't looked up his figures, but you would assume he does. And I mean, like, the days of him making an interesting record appear to be gone. I mean, I loved that first record when I was younger. Like, I mean, I was obsessed with it, kind of wore it out. And I think, you know, over the years, he's had the odd kind of decent banger. But overall, he just strikes me as like, you know, his stock and trade is just touring the world and, you know, playing sets to people who love him. So why try and write a song anymore?
Yeah, I mean,
probably because that's what he started doing. Yeah. And, you know,
keep
I guess
doing your thing. But it's weird to just kind of put out one song after he's apparently been playing it a lot live for years.
You see, he doesn't have an incentive really to release albums. Yeah. You know, as in he's probably not feeling like, oh God, you know, I need to get an album in 2017 or anything.
Yeah, but I'm thinking he's set. Anymore, is he? Like,
I'm thinking he's surely working on other material as well or playing other songs. So he must really stand behind this song if he's going, okay, this is my first release in 4 years. Do you know what I mean? He's like, the people need to hear this that aren't coming to my gigs.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, look, someone who is using the album to advance his career.
Devastating effect.
to electrifying effect. You heard him at the start of the show. It's young Edward Sheeran. And this is Off Divide. Let's have a little listen.
Now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. Well, I'm in love with your body. Oh, I, oh, I, oh, I, oh, I. I'm in love with your body. Oh, I, oh, I, oh, I, oh, I. I'm in love with your body. Oh, I, oh, I, oh, I, oh, I. I'm in love with your body. Every day discovering something brand new. I'm in love with the shape of you.
When we came, we let the story begin. We're going out on our first date. Mm-hmm. You and me are thrifty, so go all you can eat. Fill up your bag and I fill up the plate.
So that's Shape of You. We discussed it previously on the podcast when it came out, along with Castle on the Hill. I said that one sounded like Mumford & Sons and one sounded like Sia. Shape of You sounds like Sia to me. And yeah, it comes four tracks in. He does this thing on his records, before we really get going here, I mean, like, he does this thing where it's very kind of whiplashy. It's like, you know, here's the, you know, introverted, you know, ballad, and now here's the more radio-friendly song, and now here's the introverted ballad, and here's the more radio-friendly song. How did you guys get on with this record?
I don't even know where to start. It's very schizophrenic. I will say it's very memorable as well. Like, after one listen through of this record, I could have told you about what was happening on track 7. Like, this is, you know,
yeah, that's
as you say, because
yeah,
he switches it up so much, and because he is this very talented guy at, like, you know, creating these songs that are going to be hits, obviously. And, like, I'm sure, well, all of these songs are hits because they're just dominating Spotify and streaming services and everything. But, I mean, I don't know if I could call any of the songs on this really, really good songs, even though they're memorable. So I don't know what that means. The singles, Castle on the Hill kind of works, even in like a really cynical way. I mean, it has that, it's almost like a driving home for Christmas sentiment.
How old was he when he broke his leg again?
Oh, 6 years old, is that? Oh, 6 years old.
That's it, yeah.
Broke my leg. Yeah.
Woo!
Woo! And combined with like some U2, like Sometimes You Can't Make It On Your Own, just like anthemic,
yeah,
driving thing. Like,
very
he's,
much so.
He's good at hitting those notes. And then he does like Shape of You, which is clearly just like, okay, now you have to do, you know, this song for this demographic. And it's just him doing that tropical, sparse pop thing that's been everywhere for like 3 years. And it's just his version of that. And it's disgusting. Like, it really is just a disgusting song. It's horrible. It's so,
oh my God, Craig,
dead-eyed.
I love it so much. So my feeling on this album is basically Shape of You I've downloaded on iTunes and have been listening to on a loop.
Really?
And none of the other songs will I ever listen to again. But so he wrote Shape of You and gave it to Rihanna, who rejected it, which,
love Rihanna,
is kind of a bit of a head fuck, because I've realized that my favorite version of Ed Sheeran is Ed Sheeran pretending to be a woman who he thinks is defined by two characteristics. One, she's a sexy lady, and two, she's from Barbados. So
like, I think that's why I find this disgusting.
But like, honestly, if there was an album by Ed Sheeran called Songs Rejected by Rihanna, I would be paying literal money for it. I would be paying up to including €20 for it. I love Shape of You. It's so, I mean, it is like, you're gonna tell me that it's like generic and it's, you know, cynically made for a pop audience, whatever, and it obviously is. He wouldn't write a song for Rihanna that he thought was going to be, you know, her B-side or, you know, on her deluxe issue or anything. But I love the feel of it. It reminds me of like Justified era Justin Timberlake, and I love it. But it sounds like nothing else in the album, and then
yeah,
nothing
yeah.
else in the album. Like, I mean, I think you're right, Craig, that's very disjointed. Like, it kind of sounds like a collection of songs or like a greatest hits or something.
Yeah. My only real issue with Shape of You is the weird whoa-ah, whoa-ah, whoa-ah bit, which sounds
that's
like
what pop music is.
What about when he starts going, mm-hmm, it's very, and again, like, you can hear
you see,
a different artist doing that.
He thought that would be sexy when Rihanna's doing it.
He can't sell it.
Yeah, thank you. This is the problem. Okay, first of all, the whoa-ah bit, like, I mean, makes a lot more sense if Rihanna's doing it. But it, coming from his voice, it just reminds me of Walking on Cars and their whole shtick. Whereas Ed Sheeran, and I'm sure millions of girls would disagree with me, I don't think he can do sexy. Like, he can't do sexy. His whole thing. Did you see the fucking picture of him in HMV when he was buying his own album? Like, as if he was, like, you know, on the morning of an election going to cast the vote.
Yeah.
He's dressed up like the staff. He's wearing, like, the Divide t-shirt. He has a name badge.
I felt bad when everyone's slagging him over that, though, because, like, you
but
know.
it just looks odd. And, like, you know, like, again, the whole Ed Sheeran thing appears to be, like, you know, oh, but he's a great guy. And it's like, okay, cool. But as a pop star, he's maybe the least interesting one out there. Like, he's so beige, and yet he's so massive, and I don't quite get it. Like, my kind of... I don't hate this album. And the weird thing is, I mean, like, my kind of relationship with Ed Sheeran started in Hot Press magazine. And I said it before, I think, on the podcast, where it's like... That first album comes out, right? And I was just out of college, and I was in very much Charlie Brooker mode, wanting to be cool, and I was a bit angry and all that kind of stuff. Not like now, obviously. And, you know, I'm given the album to review, his first album. It's called fucking Plus, was it?
Plus.
Yeah. Plus, yeah. Plus and I wrote this really angry review, and gave it 1 out of 5, and I trashed it. And I was called into the office, and I was told, we're not printing this. You know, we have to stand by, blah, 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 blah. There's one line in particular in it, I said it before, but it was like I said, he dives headfirst into genres and styles that he has no business even listening to, which to this day, Craig Fitzpatrick says...
Yeah, I thought that was... Yeah, you can't... But hold on, wait, actually. To update this story that we've heard quite a lot, I did said at the time, come on, people should be allowed to, you know, delve into whatever music they want. That's an absolutely ridiculous thing to say. When we get into the deluxe version of this album, there's a song, track 14, which I feel bad about even saying the title. Bibia Bay Yay Yay.
It's like of, he went to Africa. Appropriation
it's a gap year.
Album.
Let's say he didn't do it as well as Vampire Weekend. Put it mildly.
I will concede. So. And the only reason I'm telling this story again, by the way, is because it's actually contextually relevant for once. Because it led to that album being passed down the line. I think you might have reviewed it.
I can't remember if I reviewed it or not, but I feel like, I mean, I think if... I would have brought up like the same issue with that sentence. Like, that sentence is ridiculous.
Yes, that's fair.
But
yes.
I think part of the reason why, you know, they didn't want to give it a terrible, like, scathing review is because I was interviewing Ed Sheeran. Mm-hmm. Or I did interview him soon after that. So at the time, they were probably trying to secure an interview with him.
Of course. And I understand that. And again, like, you know, I was very much in my kind of stubborn mode. And, you know, I think apart from that, the review was okay. I didn't have any major issue with it. But the point is, when it comes to his second album, I reviewed that for Drowning Sound 3 years ago, and I wrote a very thoughtful review, I believe. I gave it 4 out of 10, but I think it's a very fair review. And, you know, I had learned kind of from the previous one. But what I also learned in coming to that record, though, was that I was like, I'm going to give him more of a chance than I gave him before when I was being a bit of a dick. And I did give him more of a chance, and I just didn't quite get it back from him. And my whole thing was, this guy's really fucking talented, and he chooses to write these saccharine songs for the audience that he has a very, very tight fan base with, instead of trying to be a bit more adventurous. And I mean, I wrote in this, if I may quote from my own review, if I may be like that pretentious for just a second.
It is your own podcast.
I said, you know, every man emotion, straightforward lyrics, relatable pain. We've all been there. That's the Sheeran blueprint, and it's unlikely to go away regardless of the girl in question. He doesn't write for the critics, and a tight relationship with his fans means he's so bulletproof that there's no real need to. However, he did speak before of a desire to win critics over. And I just find it, with this album, I was genuinely curious to see if he'd kind of advanced a little bit. And I think, if anything, he's taken a step back.
Yeah, like I interviewed him for the last record, and I didn't actually mind the last record. I thought there was some actually interesting stuff on it. And when he tried to do kind of hip-hop and stuff like that, it came off a lot better than it does here. For whatever reason, he seems to have taken steps back where... I mean, Dave, last episode you were talking about the opening track, and you said you thought it was pretty good. Well, I mean, what do you think of the... That was a kind of live version.
Yeah, there's like a 6-minute version that he did for some web thing that had previously supported him, which, and I thought it was surprisingly all right, even though it's still not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. Eraser is the name of the track. It opens up this one, and it's the... Yeah, it's a more cut-down version. Not great. I mean... One of the more interesting tracks on the record, because it actually does veer around the place a little bit, and it does have some of those lyrics that are kind of vaguely interesting, but he kind of cut out the best parts of it. At the same time, it's fine. It's grand as an album opener. It sets a tone that I don't think the rest of the album follows.
Yeah. I mean, there was lots of moments on this where it was kind of similar to the Rihanna thing, where I thought, do you know what? This isn't an absolutely dreadful song. Like, a song like Dive, I was kind of thinking if this was given to Justin Bieber, I'd be like, yeah, fair play, Bieber.
Dive is good. Dive is a good song.
But again, I just can't... It seems such a weird thing to say. I would rather the artist didn't sing his own songs, because I don't think he can sell them. But that's kind of where we're at. Yeah,
I think that's a fair thing to say. You get a track like Perfect, which to me is just every Westlife track 8 ever.
And it's kind of like, oh yeah,
here's the wedding song. Here's the wedding song, because the last one.
There's a lot of that. And like, even, I mean, Supermarket Flowers, it's about a sad thing.
It's about his grandmother. Yeah.
But it's him, it's such a strange approach he's taken, because he's writing first person as his mother grieving for her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so confusing.
I feel like Kanye could do it.
Well, you would have missed this, Dave, if you didn't listen to the deluxe issue, but there is a song later on where he sings a love song to, I don't know if it's the same grandmother or the other grandmother, okay, but Nancy Mulligan, did you hear it, Craig? And he's singing a love song pretending to be his grandfather wooing his grandmother.
Yeah.
Which is so much, now in fairness, it's so much creepier when I say it like that than it is when you hear the song, because, you know, the song is fine or whatever.
Well,
but yeah, there's some
even like the way that like, you know, Supermarket Flowers ends with the whole hallelujah thing. Like, he, there's a song called A Fire Love on the second record, and it is just awash with heavenly hokum. I think he's a secret god botherer.
Yeah, I would not be surprised.
There was a good bit of Jesus talk on that one.
Yeah, actually.
But then you get a track like New Man, which is like, you know,
he's kind of having a laugh. He's having sex with some girl, but she's got a new fella that he's slagging off.
And then it's all about Instagram and broing, and like, you know, like, if you thought Kanye West talking about bleached assholes was awkward, then try having Ed Sheeran talk about it. You know,
I thought the last bonus track actually was pretty okay. Save Myself, because he sounds quite like he's actually being heartfelt in a real way. Like, he's kind of, Dave, you talked about how you think he's venomous at times, which I don't think he is. Like, but I actually like the side where he can kind of drop the "I'm a nice guy" all the time.
If you call back to the last record, I mean, like you said, like the more kind of interesting, kind of outside the box aspects. I mean, Sing, which was obviously him doing Justin Timberlake, you know, with Pharrell on it. I think that's a really good pop song. Don't, I think, is the name of the record, or the song on that record, which is, like, you know, written about, you know, a famous ex who cheated on him, whose name I won't say out loud because I don't want to get sued, but I think we all know who it is. And that was, like, you know, clearly taken from, like, 90s R&B, and, like, it has, but those songs, and that one in particular, is him being pissed off and a bit, you know, grievous, and you're kind of like, okay, that's interesting. Not really getting, like, New Man on this one is kind of on the same tone, but it's just rubbish.
It's jokey and
kind of bothers me a bit. Like, he's getting real petty.
Really petty.
Like, so there's a song on it which I actually wrote on my notes, "I don't hate this," in caps, called "What Do I Know," which is kind of a fun, surfy, Jack Johnson-y kind of thing. And I liked it.
This is the thing, there's so much to talk about in this album.
Yeah, like, literally, we could go
through, and we haven't even gotten to the main event,
all the tracks, and be like, this is a new genre that he's made up. But I liked this song, but it's very much like, oh, look, lads, I'm not really one to speak about politics. I don't have a university degree. But, you know, I think that people should just essentially, when it comes down to it, love each other and be considerate and respectful and understanding and kind. And I was like, great. What a great theme for a song. You know, can't argue with that. But then on this New Man song, he is super judgy.
He's so nasty on it. Yeah,
he's like, he's talking about this girl he was with, and now they've split up and she's with a new guy. And she's slagging off the new guy, and, you know, with all these cliches, like, he's got tattoos and he goes to the gym or whatever. And then there's a whole verse where he just slags her off and is like, oh, like, you used to eat crisps with me and now you're eating kale and you're going to the gym and you like Kylie Jenner. And it's like, sorry, Ed, she still deserves love just because she likes Kylie Jenner. If she follows Kylie Jenner on Instagram, the woman still deserves
kale
love and
is
happiness.
Great as well.
Yeah, kale's awesome. I love kale.
And yeah, like, just a little bit petty for me, that song. I mean, it just rubbed me up the wrong way.
That's totally fair. He comes across like a fucking dick.
Well, okay, right. So if we talk about Galway Girl,
okay, are we there
yet? The first thing, just to tie into that, is the line where he's just like, she fell in love with an Englishman. Like, he's talking about, like, one day in a pub, he's just like, yep, she's in love with me.
It's poetic license.
There's a lot of, do
or
you
else
think?
It's him having a,
because,
massive,
like,
ego.
People were kind of, okay, the whole thing about Ed Sheeran is he's, like, the guy next door, he's really nice, and by all accounts, he seems lovely. But there's also this thing of, like, you know, he's kind of the underdog, and you're rooting for him, and, like, you know, when he passed out the Weeknd's record for Spotify, everyone's like, yeah, you know, it's a real artist,
I wasn't.
Blah, blah, blah. No, but, you know, on Twitter, some people were saying it's crap like this. But I think he is way more self-confident and just, like, cocksure than the Weeknd is in himself.
Well,
I think he is like, I am the shit.
You raise a very interesting thing here, because one of the reviews I kind of read was saying, like, you can't get to the level he's gotten to without some degree of Machiavellian machinations behind the scenes, you know? And I'm not saying that, you know, the guy's a fucking secret serial killer or anything, but, like, you can't be that nice, mate.
No, do you know what it is? He's the busker. He's the guy that had to play gigs to earn some money, and he's developed a show, and he's a crowd pleaser, and it's that amplifies to where he's the biggest star in the world. But he's still thinking the same way of, like, okay, this will work with... Like, if we talk about Galway Girl, the record company apparently begged him not to put it on. And he was just like, nope, I'm having this song.
And yeah, he seems to have, like, he's fairly open about the fact that he wants to be a huge artist. He wants to do big. I don't know what that thing about the Super Bowl was, because anything I've read from him, he tends to be like, yeah, I'd love to be as big as you two.
He played Croke Park. I mean, exactly. Like, what's he on about?
Yeah.
And, like, he has said publicly about Galway Girl that when the record label said to him, like, oh, we're not feeling this, in those exact words, I assume, he was like, look, there are millions of Irish people. Like, let's talk numbers, people. You know, I think he's pretty open about the fact that he wants to be super successful and to build on his success with each album.
Which is fine, but it doesn't make for a masterpiece of a record that I want to listen to.
It doesn't. Yeah. I mean, the story behind Galway Girl apparently is that he did a couple of sessions with a trad band called Bioga.
Yep.
And the girl who plays the fiddle in the band is called Niamh Dunn. And they're literally doing like a session. And he looks at her and he's like, she plays the fiddle in an Irish band. And then he makes that the first lyric. And then everything else after that lyric is completely made up.
Yeah. So she didn't drink him under the table.
Or beat him in pool. She's actually not from Limerick. She's from Limerick. She's not from Galway at all.
Limerick Girl doesn't work.
So, Limerick Girl doesn't work. He actually, that's another thing Leash I heard him say, was that he really, really tried to like come up with something better than Galway Girl and he couldn't. As in, he kind of did Galway Girl and was like, oh, but Mundy's already got that song, so I'll have to.
I don't want to step on Mundy's turf.
There's no other place
he
names
loves
in Ireland.
Mundy. He genuinely loves Mundy. He's taught me this. And yeah, then he was like, actually, Galway Girl just rolls off the tongue so well that I can't get rid of it.
Well, he genuinely loves like Planxty and Damien Rice and stuff. You know, so he's genuine
he's
in his love for Irish music,
but
he can't do it.
How did you interview him? Like, did you... is it written behind the eyes? The shark eyes.
I'm going on the record to say that I don't believe he's a cyborg. Yeah, I think... So I interviewed him once, which was like in a hotel room on our own. And then shortly after, at Electric Picnic in front of a crowd of fans.
Yes.
And he was so incredibly different. But I mean, that's kind of natural, isn't it? Like in front of his fans, he was so open and charming. And I mean, he was very polite when it was just the two of us, but he seemed a bit kind of... I think maybe he probably knew that I didn't like his album and I was probably a bit dismissive. I don't think I was rude to him or anything, but I think I was maybe kind of... I mean, I asked him a whole lot of questions about why he's so into Lego.
Is he still into Lego?
Very strange.
He's got Lego tattoos.
Possibly still into Lego.
Lego tattoos.
I think I was
supposed to be
like,
handy
His tattoos are legendarily terrible. Have you ever seen them?
Oh, doesn't he give them to himself and stuff like that?
Oh, they're shocking bad. Like, they're really, really
shocking
bad.
They are. That's the real draw.
This is the thing, though. He's slagging off this guy in a song for having tattoos.
His,
like,
are awful.
What's your fucking deal, man?
I say that as someone who's got plenty of tattoos.
But no, I've heard from very reliable sources that he's like incredibly polite and nice. And I can't say he was anything less than a million times.
Yeah,
mannerly.
Like, and when I interviewed him, I didn't get much out of him, but he was polite and it was perfectly pleasant. So it was that kind of thing.
I had to introduce a band after the Ed Sheeran Hoppers interview in that tent.
Oh no, I forgot about this.
A mass exodus of people, the likes of which you've never seen before. I believe it was Wonder Villains. And I went on the stage and I said, and now with the unenviable task of following Ed Sheeran, here's popular Northern Irish beat collective, Wonder Villains. And I literally dropped the mic and I walked off stage and I walked out of the tent.
Why?
Because I was just like, I'm not hanging around for this.
Why
were you not supposed to interview them?
Thankfully not. It was just a performance. And they looked at me like, oh, thanks. Okay. And I was like, yeah, you're on your own.
Wow.
Shady.
Was that a Sunday?
That's a bit salty.
I think it was a Saturday or a Sunday.
Wow. But so you weren't even dead inside yet.
What a shock. I wasn't in a good mood at the festival. But hang on. Let's come back to Galway Girl, because, I mean, a friend of mine sent me this track as if I hadn't heard it. Like, and he goes, man. And I was like, yeah, I know. He said, he goes, do you reckon like he just goes home and like walks into his house and closes the door behind him and just starts laughing, like he knows that he's put one over on everybody? And also, is the song cultural appropriation? Are we going there? Like, I mean, is this really like, or should some people are genuinely annoyed about this song, like really annoyed?
I don't know. I mean,
like, I think it's harmless.
It's harmless.
I don't find it like offensive as an Irish person.
I'm the least patriotic person I know, and it's just like, I kind of feel like I think it's just a bad song.
Yeah. I think there is an element with Ed Sheeran that he is a gateway drug for
heroin.
For heroin. For teenagers who maybe haven't really discovered rap yet or haven't really discovered trad yet. So in that way, I mean, I'm fine with him being a gateway drug for other people. One thing I have to say about Galway Girl that I find so interesting, because I heard it first and I was like, oh my God, fetishizing Irish women, that's fucking great. Well done, you multimillionaire man.
Mm-hmm.
But weirdly, because this girl who happened to be standing beside him and plays a fiddle was also a musician at the session with him, she's credited as a songwriter on the album. So she'll be getting, presumably, some of the royalties from this song, which is like one of the only cases I can think of where a guy wrote a song about a crazy one-night stand he had and the girl is going to make bank on it. I love this.
Yeah, well, that's cool. And it went to number one in Ireland and it will obviously be, you know, perpetually kind of mentioned throughout the year and that kind of thing. I mean, this is probably going to be one of the biggest selling records of the year.
Like. And also in Ed is actually nice stuff. I mean, he's helped a lot of other artists. It was Jamie Lawson got a number one album off the back of it. Foy Vance speaks very highly.
Jamie Lawson basically has a amazing career off the back of it now.
So, you know, he seems like an...
And he brought him to Croke Park for that gig as well. I do want to have a listen to the last kind of 15 seconds or so of Galway Girl just for a second, please. I mean, that to me sounds like, I know he's going for the whole ramp it up and we're all having a big Kaylee here, but that to me sounds like a plane on fire with a bunch of clowns in it going down. It's fucking weird, right?
And that he doesn't end the album with it is baffling.
I guess, yeah, I mean, it's another rare cheering record. He is the most critic-proof guy out there. Scores.
I totally forgot we'd have to give this a score. It seems beyond scores. I don't know. That's like... Three, maybe.
Selena Murphy.
Is it out of 10?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I would probably give it like 9 for Shape of You. And then for collective other songs, I would go with 4.
His Rihanna album's going to get like 10 out of 10.
Sexy Lady.
For me,
Sexy
oh my
Lady
God.
From Barbados,
I'm
yes.
so excited. Please do it, Ed.
I'm going to go with 3, which brings him down from a 4, the last record I did, but brings him up from that 1 out of 5 caustic review that never ran Hot Press in 2011. So not bad, Ed. You're doing all right.
I would like to say that this album makes me think that there might be an album for me one day that's an Ed Sheeran album. That
he definitely
like.
Has like the ability to craft stuff, but it's just, if he got really pissed, if like he got, went through a really, really dreadful relationship.
There's potential
and just
there.
Turned completely bitter. He could maybe do something that was like a light Elvis Costello.
Jesus, he'll love to have that sentiment.
I hope
out.
It doesn't happen to him for his personal life, but I'm just saying in that situation, maybe something.
Sorry,
good
did you just say
out.
He might write a good Elvis Costello?
Light Elvis Costello.
Okay, have we heard anything else lately that's worth listening to?
I've been listening to The Fall a lot this week because Marky Smith turned 60. He was like the Ed Sheeran of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. I love the idea of you writing business journalism over News Talk blaring The
Blind,
Fall.
Yeah. there's an amazing compilation which is 50,000 Fall fans, can't be wrong, which is a great starting point. And the Peel Sessions are amazing and they're a great band. He's a terrible genius. That
very,
was it.
Yeah. Very, very good. Selena?
I have been listening to a guy called Jameson, who's like a Detroit-based white boy who makes like very sultry soul music. Oh. And I like it very much. And he has an album coming out in April. I've forgotten what it's called because literally I just go onto his YouTube channel and like repeat. But I'm very excited for the album. And after that, it's been mostly Mariah Carey, The Emancipation of Mimi, which is... gotten me through an illness recently and I'm so grateful for Mariah for making that album. And Jermaine Dupri, actually. Doesn't get a shout out enough on this podcast.
Shout out to Jermaine. I've caught up with the just confirmed for Friday night headliner at Longitude, Stormzy. Gang Signs and Prayer. It took me ages to get around to it for whatever reason. We talked before on the show. I know Craig is a bit of a grime skeptic.
I'm not a skeptic, but I just can't get into it.
Yeah,
I'm not quite a skeptic, not quite a skeptic.
I think it's because we're both very white, but at the same time, you know, I think this is really fucking good. I think the hype is justified here. Storm's been getting an awful lot of press. He got a congratulatory tweet off Papa Roach. Would you believe?
That's big. Ed Sheeran didn't get that.
Topped off his week, I would imagine. This is really great. It's got a problem in that it's 16 tracks long, and I wish it wasn't, but that's my own personal kind of, you know, preferences, and that I just can't stand long albums anymore. But no, Stormzy's great, and this is really, really worth checking out. And Craig, I would recommend that you give it a go in between your fall binge.
I will give it a go, and I'll report back.
Very good. Selena, thank you so much for coming in for deputising for Colm Regan this week.
Thank you. Woo. Yay!
Clapping again for yourself.
Someone wolf whistle.
I can't. Can you?
I can't.
Yeah. No, me neither.
No, I can't do it.
Colm, we failed you.
Damn it. I bet Colm could do a really good wolf whistle.
He could, yeah.
Definitely. I hope he doesn't like do it, though. Could.
Yeah. Well, you know, take from that what you will. We'll definitely have you back, I hope. And as always, to close us out, we will have a new Irish track. Paddy Hanna is someone I interviewed before back in his Grand Pocket Orchestra days, and I have to say it was one of the funniest interviews I've ever done in my life. I could not stop laughing. He wouldn't stop talking about movies starring Van Damme from the 80s and such. It was one of the most ramshackle interviews I've ever done, and it was fucking great. He's since kind of matured a little bit, as we all have, I feel. carving out a really good name for himself as a solo songwriter, his new track Bad Boys is described here as a baroque cut of shimmering, intelligent pop. And that's exactly what it is. It's great. It's kind of throwbacky and strange. One to keep an eye on, an artist I need to check out more of myself. This is Paddy Hanna and Bad Boys. My name is Dave Hannerty. This has been No Encore. There will be No Encore. We'll be back next week. See you then.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
I feel very pressured because Colm is so the man who's always like, guys, you're getting off fucking course.
Oh, yeah, oh don't worry about that.
Straight and narrow. So one of you is going to have to be that because I don't know if I can.
We can ramble. Fine.